I'd like to call the Senate Committee on Health Policy to order. It's Wednesday, April 20th, 2005, and we are going to change the agenda just a little bit. We're going to have an informational hearing first. We have been doing a lot of work on transparency, cost containment. Well, we started with cost containment, and out of that, we're saying we need a lot more information before we can really deal with all of the things that might add to the high costs of health care. So when this started a couple of months ago, I met with the Hospital Association to talk about how the hospitals are the highest cost driver in the healthcare field, and so they really took it on themselves to develop a website that is going to be a resource on hospital prices, and it's really quite exciting. And so I would like Kevin Earls and Bruce. Do you want who's going to just Kevin Earls? Come up.
No, we're not going to do both.
Okay. And also, for the record, I want you to know, in case you're here, we're not going to do Senate Bill 501, 502, or 504 today. They have been moved. So if you're here for those three bills, they have been moved. Okay. Questions? Okay. Mr. Earls.
I want to talk to you about 503. I need to call.
Thank you, Madam Chair and member of the committee. For the record, I'm Kevin Earls. I'm the Vice President of Finance and Health Policy for the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems. And I am pleased to be here today and appreciate the invitation for our organization to share the rollout of a publicly available resource that we've developed in direct response to a number of the issues that this committee has expressed concern about. And that those include the issues of increasing the amount of transparency available to individual consumers around the costs and policies that make up the world of healthcare. And so what I'm going to show today, with your indulgence, is the fruits of our efforts, a two-month kind of crash course in developing a website that is available to anyone on the Internet and provides a wide range of financial utilization and charge information, as well as information around financial assistance policies and charity care for Oregon hospitals. And that website is Oregon Price Point, and it is, the address for it is orpricepoint.org. And it went public about 10 o'clock this morning. And
we're going to dim the lights here.
Thank you. And what I will do today, with your permission, is take you through how consumers will use the website, what kind of information they can derive from the site, and some background about how we put the site together. One of the things that I want to say at the outset is that the data for this website is all publicly available data. It's data that Oregon hospitals report regularly to the state of Oregon and have done so for 20 years. And our association plays a role as a data intermediary in collecting formatting the data for the state for use by state agencies and policymakers. So everything that you'll see today is a matter of public information. What we've done is created a consumer overlay that will allow people to navigate on a fairly instinctive basis to get to the information that they want to have that allows some comparison of Oregon hospitals. So, and I should mention that the template for the website is something that was developed through some pioneering work by the Wisconsin Hospital Association, our sister association. And their format for this was developed about 3 months ago. So this is the front page of the website, and as you'll note, there are two types of queries, a basic query and a comprehensive query. And these differ only in the way in which a person might navigate through them. The basic query is designed for a kind of average citizen that doesn't have a lot of exposure to medical terminology but wants to get basic information about hospital care, either in their community or comparing hospital care throughout Oregon. The comprehensive query is really developed for people kind of more within the healthcare industry. It uses medical terminology to help people drill down to very specific types of information. But the data behind both queries is the same, and you can get to exactly the same information either way. So I'm going to start by taking us through a basic query.
Could you for the record, again, say what the website is for people to get to?
Yes. The website name is orpricepoint.org. That's the web address. And there's no password or other information that's required to access it. It's just up on the web as of 10 o'clock this morning. So, first of all, looking at the basic query, the first thing that the person is asked to do is just pick a hospital. You know, and you can pick a hospital in one of two ways. You can either pick it by city, and the drop-down menu gives you every city in the state that has a hospital in its community, or you can pick it by county, and it will display all hospitals in that county. So since we're in Salem, I'm going to pick Marion. I'd hope that Senator Courtney was going to be here today. I wanted to show him how the local hospital here is doing. And so the next screen brings up, okay, you've selected Marion County. Now select among the facilities that are available in Marion County. And in Marion County, there are three: Salem Hospital, Sania Memorial Hospital in Staten, and Silverton Hospital. So you can now select any one of those hospitals. I'll select Salem. Then it takes you to the next screen, which asks the individual to describe, in effect, or select the part of the body or the kind of procedure that they're interested in. And we actually do this, again, we're trying to focus on it for the basic query, for a really intuitively easy way to navigate. So at the top, on the left-hand box, as you see, we have the 10 most common types of hospitalizations in Oregon. And I'll show you those in a moment. I'll tell you that these are about 64 diagnosis-related groups, or diagnostic-related groups, or DRGs, as they're called in the industry. And they comprise over 50% of all the hospitalizations in the state of Oregon. So just within that top choice, there are over half the discharges in the state of Oregon. Below that, in the next seven choices, the person can navigate based on a particular area of interest. So if they want to know about alcohol and drug abuse, they can choose that, and then they can begin to drill down to specific procedures or diagnoses within there. Similarly with bones, joints, muscles, childbirth, newborn, heart and cardio, psychiatric rehab, or stomach and digestive procedures. I'm going to pick from the 10 most common, and again, everything in the 10 most common is also accessible from the other seven, but it just helps the person, you know, navigate based on the way that they're most comfortable with. And I'm going to pick a normal newborn, and it will now bring up a page that one of the points of the website is to try and provide helpful consumer information. So this brings up a page that you know, we think of this as kind of the teachable moment. You're about to see the data, and here's what we want you to understand about the data that you're going to view. So we're going to provide a little bit of education before we actually show you the results of the query. First of all, we're going to show you the name, address, and telephone number of the hospital. Secondly, we're going to show you the number of discharges, the length of stay on average, the information about average and median charges for the selected hospitals, all hospitals in the county, all hospitals that are, in effect, kind of peers in terms of volume or a charge basis with other hospitals in the state, and finally, all Oregon hospitals together as a group. And then we make the point, please note, that this is for hospital services. The information you're going to see does not include costs that are also going to be associated with your hospital visit for physicians, anesthesiologists, surgeons, and so forth. It also begins to lay a little bit of information about one of what we think is the kind of the fundamental important things for people to understand about hospitals, which is that they have, at the end of the day, they have three clients. They have Medicare, Medicaid, and they have commercial insurers. So they deal primarily with those three kind of customer bases, and underneath those, virtually everyone that we see is grouped. Now, we also see people that don't have insurance, and I'll talk about that. We also see people that pay directly and choose not to have insurance or can't afford to pay for insurance. But the vast majority of our business deals with those three payers. So we begin to talk about that. With that as a background, I'm going to click on View Results. And it will now show you the data that's been described for the hospital that you've chosen, for the procedure that you've chosen. So you see at the top, Salem Hospital Regional Health Services and their contact information and address. In red, the procedure that you've selected, which is normal newborn. Below that, the period for which the data is being used. What is the period of data that's being drawn upon to show these results? And at this point, I'll tell you that we will be updating this. As you see, it's for the full calendar year 2004. That is in the data world like 2 minutes ago. It's very, very recent data. And we will be updating this on a quarterly basis, on a go-forward basis. Now, if you begin to look at the rows and columns, the first column is selected hospital, Salem Hospital, and it shows first the number of discharges, 2,634, the average length of stay, 2.2 days, the average charge for that is $1,223. It shows the average charge per day and the median charge. Now, again, we're trying to see this as a teachable opportunity to educate consumers. So you'll notice to the left of each one of these rows, there's a blue question mark symbol. And you can click, a person can click on that, and it brings a call-up box that provides information about the terminology that we use in the website. So let's just say people don't understand what average charge per day means. They can click on that. It brings up a call-out box that says average charge per day means total charges divided by the number of inpatient days for the service that you picked. So it gives them a significant amount of contextual information to understand the data that they're viewing. I'm going to close that window and just point out that every one of these terms that we use is populated with a box, a symbol that helps explain to the individual more about that term. So we have this information about Salem hospitals. Then to the column to the right of that, we have all hospitals in this county. Now, we've already picked among the three that I showed you, but in case they had forgotten, they can click on this arrow and it will bring the box up showing what hospitals are in that county again. And close that box. And it shows that of all hospitals in this county, there were, with Salem combined, 4,350 discharges, and it shows the associated length of stay and charge information. The next column is all Oregon hospitals with similar average adjusted charge per discharge. Now that's a mouthful, but what it really means is that we've established a methodology for grouping hospitals to others in the state that have a similar volume and charge basis. We call them peer groups. So we want people to be able to say, well, this is what Salem Hospital does, but I don't really want to compare them with Staten or Silverton, because Salem Hospital is quite large, and those two hospitals are very small. They have less than 50 beds. So I want to compare them to apples and apples with other hospitals that are of a similar size. So we can click on that, and it shows all hospitals in the state that have a similar average adjusted charge per discharge. Again, who are the peers for Salem Hospital? It shows that list. Similarly, as I said, this is a mouthful, so people might like to know what the methodology is behind it. We give them additional detail about how we developed that methodology. And, you know, in the sake of expediency, I'm not going to read it, but the methodology is very clear. It's there, and it shows how we determined that. We actually created 5 peer groups in the state of Oregon to show hospitals within the context of their peers. And then finally, in the column to the right, we have all Oregon hospitals. So this information shows you, for instance, how many normal newborn discharges occurred in the calendar year 2004 in the state of Oregon as a whole. There were 35,191. So this information is also helpful to getting the big picture of volume of procedures in the state. Now, what else could a person glean from this? They would note that the statewide average length of stay is 2 days. But at Salem Hospital, they're 10% over the statewide average. So they keep their newborns, their normal newborns, 10% longer than the statewide average. And that's, you know, I think that's a reasonable thing for people to want to know. But it also shows that the average charge at Salem Hospital is $1,223 for a normal newborn, where the statewide average is $1,580. So what that helps you understand is that the average charge per day or the median charge for Salem Hospital are both lower than they are for other hospitals as a whole, taken as a whole. What that means is, though, is at Salem Hospital, even though the stay is 10% longer, the overall cost of the delivery is lower because their charge structure is lower. And I'm going to return to this as we go through the website because it's a building point for more information. Then there are 3 footnotes down here near where the cursor is, and they read, notes about this table, understanding facility charge information, and why charges may differ between facilities. And I'm going to race through this, but it's very meaty information. And what it really is intended to do is to help people understand that the hospital business is not like Walmart or like a buying pencils, where all you want to do is find the cheapest price. What it tries to help people understand is that Oregon has 59 acute care hospitals, and every one of those hospitals has a very, very different context for the services that they provide, the economic circumstances of the facility, the range of services they provide, the patient mix that they have, and so forth. And this information is explained in these footnotes. So I'm going to just kind of walk through them without explaining them, but show you that that information is here, and we want consumers to understand this information. So first of all, we remind people that hospital charges do not include all the professional fees that are also a part of a hospital visit. That number two, the data is based on the most recent 4 quarters for which data is available. Number 3, that charge is not the same as expected payment. And I'm going to spend some more time on this as we go through, because it's an issue of discussion that, you know, others viewing this website have raised, and I want to address that. So it says charge is the amount that we bill for insurance. It's not the same as what we get paid. And going back to this idea of there being 3 customers, we have 1 charge, but we have 3 different payment amounts from 3 different customers, and I'll talk about that. Because each case is different, a given payment's charge may not be the same as the average. You know, an individual charge for a normal newborn at Salem Hospital is not going to be, $1,070 or on median or average charge of $1,223. It's going to vary based on the actual circumstances of that episode of care. But on average, it's $1,223. So we want people to understand the difference between an individual experience and a 12-month average. So, and we talk about some antitrust issues where...
Senator Morissette.
Thank you. Madam Chair, don't you think you should give some examples of professional fees or have another footnote that tells what those are? Because I don't know what all could be included in professional fees. That could be a huge thing. It could be very small.
Senator Morissette, first of all, we don't have that data. We have data about hospitals. So if there's professional fee data that needs to be included, that's data that we don't have access to currently. We do bill some of it through our billing systems, but it's not something that we keep data on. So I don't disagree, and we make every attempt in here to make clear to people that this information does not represent everything. It just represents the hospital piece, because we're hospitals and that's what we can tell you.
Okay, just one brief. I would hope and suggest perhaps that you give people a hint of what they might be up against in terms of other professional fees, because that, to me, that raises all kinds of questions. And I understand what you're doing, but people get mad at the hospitals for other professional fees that they get on their bill. They don't understand the difference, and I think that it would be helpful somewhere in there to have another footnote saying other professional fees, a list of possibilities, just so people know what they are.
Madam Chair, Senator Morissette, I appreciate it, and I agree about the confusion and concern, because a lot of times hospitals have a communication problem with patients over bills for which they have no control, and yet it's seen as, gee, I went to the hospital, I got this bill, it's from a doctor I've never even met, I don't know this person, why am I getting a bill from them? So we do, I think that's a very helpful suggestion.
And Senator Morissette, I had the same concern, but it would be helpful to know how much the various pieces of equipment, how much does your pacemaker cost, how much does the pacemaker fibrillator, and I found out that a pacemaker costs $2,000, but the new one costs $30,000. So that, as well as, you know, of course, your physician surgeon charges, and prescription drugs. So I think this is a great first step, and it's going to probably open, hopefully, the doors to a lot of other transparency issues that we want to address in the future, if not this session.
Madam Chair and members, I want to reiterate this. If I mentioned it at the top, excuse me for repeating myself, but we did this in a very short period of time. This is a beginning. This is not the last word. We simply wanted to kind of create a footprint and start the dialogue and the conversation around what does transparency mean for individual consumers, and what can we tell them that's useful information, and we'll add to it, it'll evolve, and so I want you to understand this is just a beginning.
Thank you.
The next section is understanding facility charge information, and I'll just go through this. It begins the discussion around the fact that not all payers pay the same amount for hospital services, and that government programs typically tell us what they're going to pay us for services. We don't negotiate with that. We're, as they say in the world of economics, we're price takers. So we don't have any ability to negotiate those. Number two, we negotiate with commercial insurers or other purchasers, and we negotiate discounts based on the group of patients that they bring or the group of enrollees that they bring. So if we have a group of 50,000 enrollees that we're negotiating with, or a group of 500, the pricing and discounts that they receive will likely be different because a lot of it's volume driven. And finally, we make a point to begin the dialogue around financial assistance. We say hospitals typically have policies that allow low-income people to receive free or reduced charge care. So we talk about that. Then the third section of this is, why do charges differ between facilities? This is an equally important area of consumer education. You know, a person might logically ask, well, why is a normal newborn at Salem Hospital so much less than a normal newborn at pick a hospital. I mean, it just for this, and I don't even know if, because I haven't checked in advance, but let's say it's less than Legacy Emmanuel or OHSU. Well, there are many reasons why those charges might be different, and this lays out about a dozen of them, and I'm just going to touch on them quickly. The first is payer mix. You know, back to this idea about hospitals having three customers, Medicaid, Medicare, and commercial. Well, Medicaid pays us terribly. It pays us way, way below our actual cost of providing the care that we provide. Medicare pays us poorly. In other words, it pays us less than our actual cost, but significantly better than Medicaid. That leaves the third client, which is private insurance. And in order to keep doors open, one fundamental thing is true for hospitals. Whatever they lose in under-reimbursed care from Medicaid and Medicare, they have to make up in the charges the rates of reimbursement that they receive from commercial payers. Similarly, free care that's provided under financial assistance and charity care is not free at all. It is money that must be, in effect, made up for in the rates that commercial payers pay. That's the only way the hospitals can keep their doors open. So we talk about payer mix. And because every hospital has a vastly different payer mix, the amount of their business that is being under-reimbursed or unreimbursed has a dramatic effect on what they have to charge. So if you compare two hospitals, and I'm going to use two that I mentioned earlier, Legacy Emmanuel, which is a inner urban area tertiary care center, a level one trauma unit, one of the two top rated hospitals in terms of trauma care in the state, with another hospital that Legacy has, Legacy Meridian Park, which is located in Tualatin. Now those hospitals are, I would bet, less than 10 miles apart. But they are worlds apart in terms of how they operate and who their patients are. Legacy Emmanuel has the trauma center and has a very high Medicaid mix because it's an urban hospital. Legacy Meridian Park is a suburban setting. It has a more affluent community around it. They probably see very little Medicaid. Their Medicare patients are more affluent. So there are vast differences in the Medicaid mix of two hospitals in the same hospital system less than 10 miles apart. Very, very important issue. Other issues that come into play, facility cost structures. You know, how old is the hospital? It's going to be more expensive if the hospital is 40 or 50 years older than another hospital that you compare it to. How much new technology does this hospital have available? Now, we all know that new technology is a big driving factor in the cost of health care, and that's very true in hospitals. And, Madam Chairman, you refer to the pacemaker medical device issue. Well, similarly, if you have different levels of technology in different facilities, they're going to be reflected in their costs. Staffing costs. It's much more expensive. First of all, we have a nursing shortage. So one of the things that's true is that, you know, the vast majority of our costs in providing health care is for labor. Secondly, the labor costs are higher in urban areas than they are in rural areas. So it addresses that. The intensity of care. You know, facilities like Legacy Emmanuel and OHSU see a significantly sicker average patient than a hospital like Salem or Staten or Legacy Meridian Park or any number of other smaller community hospitals. The range of services they provide, service frequency, capital expenses, and so forth. So again, context information. Now I'm going to move quickly to the second and quite a bit shorter section of the website, but equally important. We've talked about patient volumes, average length of stay, average charge information. Now we're going to provide some context about the payer mix. This is where we go back to, you got three customers. Medicare, Medicaid, and commercial. We have a bar chart here that explains for Salem Hospital for this year that we've referred to. Here is the breakdown between payers, so the payer mix, as we call it. You'll notice that Medicare is in kind of this olive color on the right. Medicaid is in what I like to think of as the red ink section at the top. And to the left of that is private insurance. So the first thing that you might note is that private insurance comprises less than half of their volume by charge. Secondly, you would notice that Medicare alone outstrips private insurance. And the third thing that I might draw from it is that Medicaid is actually, you know, a relatively smaller piece of the pie than I would have intuitively thought. I would have thought that Salem has, you know, an even broader amount of Medicaid. But so that gives some specific information about their patient mix. And then you go down here to these pie charts, if I might. And this breaks it down in another way. So it says in private insurance, which, and it has an asterisk, it says private insurance down here, it says payments are negotiated directly with insurers. This facility collects an average of 93% of its charges in its contracts with private insurance. So one charge is used for all three of these payers, but when it comes to private insurance, they get 93 cents of their charge paid on average for that year. Now, one of the things that we note just below this is aggregate information, not specific to the one procedure that was chosen. So this is not just normal newborns. This is all procedures that Salem Hospital is providing. Next to the right is Medicare, and it shows that for Medicare, Salem Hospital collects only 52% of its charges from Medicare. And for Medicaid, it's even lower at 43% of its charges. Now, I'll tell you, on the private insurance, this is a very unusual situation, and it reflects something about Salem Hospital's philosophy. Hospitals can set their charge structures in whatever way they need to in order to make the various payer categories work out. So in effect, they use the same charge structure, but it reflects what their patient mix is and what their philosophy is around discounting. So for Salem Hospital, they have long had a philosophy of not discounting a lot, but keeping their charge structure low. So they keep their charges low, and they don't discount them a lot. They collect a relatively high amount. But you can see the proportional difference between private insurance collections and government payment collections. Then below this, you see in actual dollar figures the breakdown that for that year, Salem Hospital had of its charges to private insurance $195 million paid and $13 or $14 million not paid. Similarly, with Medicare and Medicaid, it breaks down how much of their charge structure did they get paid and how much did they not get paid because the government didn't pay them according to their charge structure. Now I'm going to drop down into the third section, and I'll just point out this red call out at the bottom. It says all information, the information above is for all services at the selected hospital, not just for, in this case, normal newborns. The third section is in direct response to this committee's discussion around financial assistance. And I know that Senator Moss Anderson and Vice Chair Cruz and others on the committee have expressed an interest in having clearer information about what hospitals are doing in their own communities to help provide charity care to those people that can't meet some or all of their hospital costs. So what we've done here is we've provided actual dollar amount of charity care that was provided on a charge basis by the hospital for the year in question. So it shows that a little over $14.5 million was provided in charity care, about 3% of total charges. And that bad debt was significantly larger than that. And I'm going to talk about the difference between charity care and bad debt briefly. Bad debt is circumstances in which people who don't meet the financial assistance guidelines of the particular hospital meaning that they don't qualify for financial assistance because of their own economic circumstances, elect to not pay their bill. So this is, bad debt is money where people are expected to pay their bill because of their own circumstances and don't. Charity care is different in that it is care that is provided to people who clearly don't have, in the hospital's assessment, the kind of resources to be able to pay their hospital bill. So charity care is, you know, may like to but can't afford to. Bad debt is can't afford to, choose not to. And, you know, you can get into a debate about whether they choose not to or they can't afford it under bad debt. And that's what takes us to this next issue.
I have a question. Why would you list the charges, and why don't you list there the actual cost rather than the charge?
Well, Madam Chair, this is at the heart of a discussion about the basis for information that we provide. We use a charge basis for a couple of reasons. First of all, it puts, you know, it's the world we live in. Hospitals work in terms of charges. And the way I like to, you know, there's several financial indicators that hospitals use, and I want to kind of take you behind the curtain for a minute and tell you how we look at things. There are at least three numbers that are important. Charge information is just that. It's what we charge everybody. We charge at the hospital, they charge the same amount regardless of whether it's private insurance, Medicare, or Medicaid. So and I liken it to the hotel rack rate. It is the undiscounted full charge for the service. The next number that you need to think of is cost. What does it cost the hospital to provide that service to that patient? So at the top end of the spectrum, you have charge. At the bottom end of the spectrum, you have, or much lower, you have a cost. What does it actually cost? The third number that you need to know is payment. And payment varies on the category of payer. So first of all, with Medicaid and Medicare, both of those actually pay below cost, as I mentioned earlier. And for private insurance, they're the only purchaser, you know, of any magnitude that pays above cost. They pay between cost and charge, so somewhere in that range. So we've used cost information because it's uniform across all payers. And we've provided context information to help people understand what, if costs are on average $1,200 for a normal newborn, you now know that if you have private insurance, the average for all charges is 93% of that charge information. Now, there are interest groups that would very much like to have absolute exact information about what every hospital in Oregon receives in payment from every payer in the state. I think there are commercial interests that would like to know where they can buy the absolute cheapest hospital care on a particular procedure and use that to negotiate lower rates. And I'll tell you that I think that is a recipe for disaster, because hospitals are not built to have a standardized rate structure like every Walmart in the country. As I've explained before, they have very different underlying missions. Some teach, some are tertiary care, some have 25 beds, others have 500. Some were built 10, 15 years ago, others were built 75 years ago. So we think this is the most equitable way for displaying a context for that. But having said all that, again, I'll return to, this is where we started. We took 2 months to put this together. This is the information that we had at hand, and we expect this to evolve over time as we talk to our members and other interested parties.
Yes, Senator Morissette. And then if you can,
need like 3-4 minutes.
Yeah, if you could do that, and then we'll...
Are we still talking about the same hospital?
Yes, we are.
Okay, thank you.
So all of this is information is a direct response to the kind of transparency issues that this committee has raised. And I tell you that while the state has been collecting this information from us for 20 years, it's only within the last 2 months that anyone has put together a way to convey this information to individual consumers. We've tried to meet the challenge that were represented in the legislation that you heard. What we think is it's a good example of what can happen with a voluntary effort. Without state money, without state mandates, without an expensive data collection mandate being added, this is just information that we already had. And it's a good beginning. But there's only a couple of states that provide this, Wisconsin and now Oregon. There may be others, but I'm not familiar with any. But the one thing that we've done, you know, that kind of pushes the envelope is that we've now posted financial assistance guidelines for every hospital in the state on this website. This is, I think, a big step forward for our members. And it was at the direction of our board of directors and our executive committee that we've done this. And I'm going to take you to a brief example. Here is a hyperlink for Salem Hospital. It takes you directly to their own in-house document that tells in great detail how they see their mission in the community, how they go about setting what their financial assistance guidelines are, how they make the trade-off between charity care and keeping the doors open and keeping care affordable for commercial purchasers. It tells about their collection practices. It tells about, you know, at what level a person qualifies for financial assistance. And I think in Salem's case, it's about 7 pages of information. We are putting the hospital's own internal document up on the website in every case. I'll tell you quickly, there are 6 or so hospitals throughout the state that are pushing right now to reformat their information to make it more readable. And if this Adobe link ever opens, you'll see one of the reasons why, you know, that's useful. But what we asked hospitals was, you know, please don't obsess about trying to repackage this. Give us what you're using today. Let us put it up there. And then as you want to tinker with it to make it more user understandable, you know, we can replace this 7-page document with, you know, a 1-page or 2-page document that's more concise. This is an actual internal document from Salem Hospital, from their business office, dealing with the revenue cycle department, talking about how they try and optimize cash flow by collecting copays, deductibles, non-covered services, uninsured balances, and so forth, to establish fair and equitable payment arrangements, and also to help people who can't meet their own financial obligations. This document goes through in significant detail what they do as a procedure. So one of the things that Salem Hospital does in the outline in this document is they screen 100% of their patients to find out if they're eligible for the Oregon Health Plan. One of the first things they do, are they available for the OHP? If they're not, do they have insurance? If they don't, do they have the resources to pay the bill?
Does every hospital have a charity care plan?
Yes.
Yes. And they are listed.
Yes,
that format.
Well, mm-hmm. I'll tell you, every hospital's format's different.
Oh, okay.
Because we told them, give us what you got. Let's not get into standardization. Let's just get it up here. We'll tinker with it as we go.
Okay.
But this is helpful because I think there's a perception that hospitals either don't have charity care policies, or that their policies aren't equitable, or that they are arbitrary, or that they somehow sit in the bottom drawer of a back office and aren't made available to people that really need the information. And we're going to dispel that myth, or those myths, through this effort to put this information right out where anybody can get it. So, okay. And that concludes my presentation.
Thank you very much. I think this is a
just wonderful. I really do think it's a wonderful start. It's going to take a while to really digest and see what all that material means. And with that, I would like to close.
Yes. Yeah. Say one thing. I want to reiterate the importance of giving people an idea of what other charges might come along, because you guys are blamed for it. And I think it's a good policy to enumerate the types of charges that people are likely to have from other sources other than the hospital.
Thank you, no. Senator. I know that you didn't mean that we were to blame for it.
You will be blamed for it by individuals, but I think you have to be proactive in letting people know that there are other charges that will come along, and give them an idea of examples of what they might be.
We'll try and address that. I think it's a very good point. Thank you.
Okay. With that, I'd like to close the informational hearing on Oregon's new hospital website resource. Anyway, I think it's great. I'd like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 1040, and I'd like to call Bruce Goldberg and Joe Ario to the front and center. And the reason we're going into 1040 is because this is a transparency bill. And Mr. Bracovian, do you want to just give a brief summary of it?
Briefly, thank you, Chair, and I will let the presenters do the detail. This does address the Office of Oregon Health Policy Research, OOPR, and the Insurance Division. It basically lets OHPR include collection of hospital data in its healthcare review. Let's OHPR collect outpatient abstract records, emergency department abstract records, disease code, race, ethnicity information when it does request hospital information. Allows OHPR to conduct oversight activities related to healthcare system and establish a statewide clearinghouse of data to include physician hospital bill charges. OHPR then would, under the bill, would prepare reports. This does exempt physicians in private practice. In terms of the Insurance Division, DCBS, Department of Consumer Business Services, it does allow them to report insurance carrier information regarding payments for hospital and other medical services. Allows DCBS to collect to collaborate with and share information with state federal agencies, and does prohibit them from disclosing any information that would identify individual person. And then it would also prohibit a cause of action against DCBS for reporting proprietary or trade secret information. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. And Aaron Kelly Seeley also.
Madam Chair, thank you for the recommending. My name is Aaron Kelly Seeley. I appreciate the opportunity just to express on the record the governor's support for Senate Bill 1040 and just a brief explanation of that support. I think this committee is well familiar by now that the rising cost of health care is a concern for all Oregonians. I think the number of folks present here today and who will be, I know, attending the next several days of hearings you have on health care cost containment issues will reiterate that concern. What's remarkable, I think, is every time I hear that the United States spends more than any other country on health care, that never ceases to amaze me. Those expenditures continue to rise. At the same time, our recent research on quality of health care information is telling us that even though we're spending that much, we receive recommended care only 55% of the time, and close to one-third of our health care expenditures go to health care that is duplicative, fails to improve patient health, or totally unnecessary. I think Oregonians want and deserve the best quality care at the best price, and that's really what Senate Bill 1040 is designed to do. Recently, the Oregon Health Policy Commission presented to the Joint Interim Legislative Committee on some of their principles for improving the health care system in Oregon, and the Subcommittee on Quality actually identified one way to improve quality and control cost, and that was increased transparency of health care data and information. And, you know, a lot of people ask, what does that mean? I think it means giving healthcare purchasers and consumers like you and I more information that is reliable and consistent and common about what we are purchasing. It another thing that never ceases to amaze me is that as consumers in this country, I think we probably would rarely choose to purchase a car or even something like internet service without comparing cost information. It's also shocking that we often make life-impacting choices about our health care without knowing very much about the quality of the health care that we're purchasing. I think the governor just simply believes that the time has come for information about cost and quality to be broadly available to the public. We have experience and research that shows that when that kind of information is available, we all benefit, quality improves, and purchasers can make informed choices about cost. So I think this bill, what needs to be appreciated about it most is that it isn't just about cost, it's also about improving quality. And I commend the committee for taking the issue on and for hearing the bill, and thank you very much just for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you.
For the record, Bruce Goldberg, Administrator of the Office for Oregon Health Policy and Research. Just to reiterate, number one, what we know is that when data and information about quality is made public, quality improves. And secondly, in healthcare, and secondly, in healthcare, as more and more of the healthcare dollar is in the hands of consumers, and as care is more consumer-driven, people need to know the price and cost of healthcare. Without giving people cost and quality information, it's as if we're giving people keys to a car and not providing them with a speedometer, an oil pressure gauge, or any of the other information that they need to navigate safely. So this information is critical if we're going to improve quality and help contain cost. I'm actually very proud of the steps Oregon's come in the last year in this regard. We've made some tremendous strides. I think you've seen today the work that the Hospital Association has done in making hospital charge data publicly available. We've been working with them in terms of making charity care information available. The Health Policy Commission and our office is working on some quality data and information, which we hope to have publicly available in July. I've had a series of meetings and are working diligently with stakeholders in terms of beginning to make seven or eight hospital quality indicators available. We also know that there is an array of information that has been collected from national sources on Oregon providers, and that there's a need to be able to make that available and put together in one site. Medicare has begun to collect data and publish data on, for instance, Oregon hospitals, but quite frankly, it's very difficult for individuals to find their way to the 10 or 15 or 20 different places on the internet or in publications where there's available information. So there's a need to take available healthcare information and put it in one place that's Oregon specific so that people can have access to that. And then there's the second piece, which is what this bill does. And what this bill does is begin to extend the available information within the state. It extends the authority of our office to collect and make available outpatient, emergency department, nursing home information. It specifically charges us with establishing a data clearinghouse, which is which is needed. And lastly, it charges us specifically with preparing and publishing the reports of cost, quality, and utilization of healthcare data. And there's a second piece to this that involves the insurance division. Let me turn it over to Joel Ario.
Thank you, Bruce. For the record, Joel Ario, Insurance Administrator with the Department of Consumer and Business Services. Let me start by commending Kevin and the Hospital Association on the website that they put up. We at DCBS put a lot of information about healthcare on our website, and I know from painful experience that whatever we put up there, it's either too much, too little, not quite the right information. We get almost all, criticism back on what we think is pretty incredibly useful data. And I suspect the hospitals are going to hear a lot of that kind of criticism of what else they can do and so forth. In fact, you can hear some from me in just a minute about next steps. But I do think it's important to start with the notion that that website does a lot more than I'll say than I expected it to do in a first run. It has not just the sticker price information. It also gives you a lot of background about how pricing really works and raises a number of other questions. And I think it's an incredibly useful tool, particularly for the kind of people that are in this room, policymakers and other kind of health policy experts. So I think that the Hospital Association should be commended. It is a very big and very important first step. And, I do this in hopes that maybe someday when we put something on our webpage, people will actually praise us before they start criticizing us, too. The second point I want to make, though, is around what could be next steps with the Hospital Association page. And it's, again, nothing critical of what's already there. It's simply talking about what can be added on to that page. And as Bruce said, it's really just a very small part of Senate Bill 1040. It's just Section 13 there on the last page of the bill is the only piece that DCBS really has a stake in. And it goes right to this issue that Kevin, I think, set up pretty well, highlighted for you, which is that the sticker price, this is not an industry like grocery stores where the sticker price is what most people pay. It's more like a car lot or something where the sticker price is just a starting point and very few people actually pay it. And so there is, I think, a lot of interest in not only what the sticker price is, but what's the take price? I mean, what do people actually pay the hospitals when we get down to brass tacks? And Kevin's right that it's commercial interests primarily that want that information right now. It's the insurers that we've heard from quite strongly over the last couple years that would like more of that information in a more public form, and it's commercial buyers, big employers, the Purchasing Coalition and others, that want it, and they want it for exactly the reason that Kevin suggested, which is to get in there and compete and try to compete the prices down. He says that would create some problems. I know it would, but those are problems, I think, in a market economy that you have to work through, not avoid. So that has been what we've heard, and that's why we're here today to say that we ought to move the next step in terms of looking from just sticker price or bill charges to looking at what actually do hospitals accept as payment, what is the paid claim data like. And you'll hear later from a number of people that a lot of what's in this bill will take a lot of expense and involve collection of a lot of new information that we don't collect today. That's not true of this piece. This data that we want, the paid claims data, is readily available today. Insurers have it. And in fact, a couple years ago, the Purchasing Coalition, which is a coalition of large private employers, was on the verge of getting the data from the insurers who wanted to provide it to do an aggregated look at that data, and it ran into antitrust problems because there are some real competitive issues here. If the way this data is collected and assembled and distributed allows insurer A to find out exactly what price insurer B negotiated, what kind of discount insurer B got, that will hurt the competitive system. That won't help the competitive system. It will hurt it. So somebody's got to be in here collecting this data that protects it against that kind of individual release of individual discounted data. In other words, it's got to be aggregated and averaged in some form. And what happened with the Purchasing Coalition was that nobody could figure out how to get that done in a way that wouldn't violate antitrust laws, and that's where the state came into the picture, and people asked us to come in and see if we could help. If the state asks for the data, that gets rid of the antitrust problem, and it also potentially gets rid of the problem of somebody having this individual data that will use it for competitive advantage over somebody else. So I don't know that we need to have the state involved in this, but we need some way to get past the antitrust issues with the data that the insurers have, and we need some way to get past the problem of somebody having the information in a form that they can use to get competitive advantage over the guy next door and find out exactly what their discounts are and so forth. So there are a lot of, you know, sensitive, difficult issues. I think Section 13 is not necessarily the answer. In fact, having heard a lot of comment on it over the last couple of weeks, I'll say today it's not the answer. There are things that need to be done there, and you'll hear, I think, a lot of testimony on it. But in the end of the day, what we want to accomplish is pretty simple. There's data out there that would augment the data that's on the hospital website now in terms of actual take price, the price that most people pay, or at least the insured population pays, as Ken points out. That's not everybody, but it's an important population. And we have support for that primarily from the insurers. You'll hear from a couple insurers today that are subsidiaries essentially of hospital systems. They have issues with this bill. But the insurers that aren't tied into hospital systems, as far as I know, all support the bill. We had a call Monday where we talked to the 8 largest plans, and you'll hear later from Regents, there was pretty much unanimity around a set of principles of moving forward.
Can I ask a question here?
Sure.
If they start reporting paid claims data, the smaller hospitals, I've heard that it could hurt the competitiveness, especially for small hospitals, and small hospitals could maybe close because of that. Can you address that issue, or do you know where I'm going with that?
Madam Chair, I think it's a very important issue, and I think there will be, like any market dynamic in a competitive market, new information in the market causes new dynamics and raises new challenges. That is one of the challenges. I think in realistic terms, everybody already knows, you know, who's got what kind of competitive situation in a general way, and so the fact that there's a little more specific information out there, I don't think is going to lead to the sky falling. But it will raise new competitive challenges for different kinds of hospitals. It may lead to different kinds of organization in the way hospitals are put together and so forth. But if we generally want a system that is more competitive, more responsive to consumers than the one we have today, the way to get there is more information, not less information. And so I'm not going to pretend that what you said isn't a problem, but I just don't think the solution can be we need to keep the system opaque in order to protect those kinds of issues. I don't know, Bruce, you may want to address that.
Senator too. George and then Senator Cruz.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'm in Section 13, and I'm kind of in shock. I mean, first of all, we're asking for proprietary information, and then we go and we provide down on line 27 in Section 4 the saying that no cause of action shall arise and no liability may be imposed against the director or authorized representative and the rest of them for disclosing that. That's craziness. I mean, I can't even comprehend that kind of language in a bill. And there's one other statement, if I could, coming back over here to page 2, and it's further declared that hospital costs should be contained through disclosure of this data, and I'm still trying to figure out how that's going to work. Now, that's a finding of the legislature. Tell me how there's any kind of fairness here for somebody who may be in an extremely competitive business who's going to give out information, and appears to me to be no requirement to keep that secure, and I'm wondering how disclosing this, you know, is going to do what we claim it's going to do on page 2, lines 4, 5, 6, and 7.
You want to take them?
Madam Chair, Senator George, I'll take the page 2 and let you all take the other piece.
How do you really feel, Gary? Okay.
I think I know. You know, in answer to your question, the disclosure of data on utilization, we have some of that now. The disclosure of data on billed charges, we just saw that being disclosed. I believe that in order for us to better understand what's going on in the healthcare marketplace, for a market to operate in a way that is truly competitive, we need to have information that's readily available, which is what we're paying. And if we don't know what we're paying, we can never control cost, because we then don't know what the cost is.
Can somebody answer the trade secret issue relative to this? Yeah. Because, I mean, this says nobody's responsible if that information should be released. if I'm reading it correctly.
Madam Chair, Senator George, I think you are reading it correctly. I don't think it's a provision we want in a final bill. We can get into the story of how the bill was put together and so forth, but again, I will say what we're here today to do is focus on the objective, and that particular provision, I think you correctly cast good aspersions on, and there are other provisions in Section 13 that I wouldn't write exactly like they're written today either, having heard the comments we've heard. But what I would direct you back to is the fundamental goal here, which is insurers have data on the actual prices that hospitals accept for services. Insurers and businesses, and I think general consumers, although less so general consumers, it's more the experts today that want access to that information. This is one strategy through the insurance division exam authority for getting that information into the public domain. But one idea that I think is very plausible here, if we could work it out, would be that the data would simply be given to the hospitals and put on their website in the same way that it was voluntarily that this website was put together. I could imagine that working. There are some issues about state action and antitrust and so forth that would be difficult to work through, but we don't care how it's done. Our objective is to get that information that's currently in insurers' hands, it married up with what's on the website, so that people who look at the website have a richer, deeper, better view of hospital pricing than they have off of the website today. The last point I want to make, and this is a very important point, I think, in the discussion, because I've sat in through a lot of these discussions, both about cost data and quality data, and invariably there gets to be the discussion of, well, can individual consumers handle this data today? Is it really going to help an individual consumer? I think the answer that's come in every discussion I've been part of after a lot of back and forth on it is probably not. We're still too primitive for that. The data is still too complicated. There's too many difficulties in trying to sort through all the data. So it's primarily its audience today is people like folks sitting in this room who are the experts who are continuing to try to make the system less opaque and more easily understood. Somewhere down the road, it will be a site that will be useful to the average consumer, I believe. But I don't think we're there now, and I think trying to focus on what the average consumer needs today is not, it's kind of a red herring.
I know that Ms. Kelly Seal has to leave. Do you have some parting words?
Madam Chair, that was my next follow-up, if I could.
Okay, but Aaron has to leave. So
okay, really quickly. This is at the request of the Governor, Ted Kulongoski. Did you guys know that was in there, this page, this section 13?
The section about liability, Senator? I'm
absolutely.
Sorry.
Absolutely. The whole tenor of that.
Chairman Sanderson, Senator George, I think that, again, this bill was drafted quickly, and we recognize openly that there are some changes that need to be made to it before it finally passes out.
And we've had conversations with the Legislative Council. They have apologized for putting forth the bill quicker than we thought it was going to come out. Okay? We needed LC drafts longer than were held.
Could be worse.
Yeah, Senator.
Really?
Does that help?
Doesn't help me a lot, no. That something that purports this scope would be a last-minute, middle-of-session thing. I guess I have the same questions, concerns Senator George had over Section 13, which I find incredibly frightening, to be quite honest. And I read the rest of the bill, and after the presentation from Mr. Earls, I think the private sector is doing a better job than we're attempting to do. So I don't think the rest of the bill is necessary.
Okay, Ms. Kelly Seal, do you want to...
No, just thank you very much. I just want to make sure I had an opportunity to answer questions before I leave. I'm sorry to have to excuse myself.
Okay. Any questions directed to her? Okay. Great. Any other questions for the rest of the panel? All right. I'd like to call Mike Becker, Patrick Pine, and Lynn Marie Kreider.
Let's just run this bit out of here just for kids.
I know. Sir?
It's not good. Let's just run this out of here. It's not green. Just, I know you can't care about it. You just paid for it. I don't like running this. Just because I haven't heard.
Okay, that's the motion. You're my fellow. You shouldn't have. I didn't know what I should do.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mike Becker with Regents Blue Cross Blue Shield of Oregon. I'm here today to testify in support of Section 13 of Senate Bill 1040. And I want to say right up front that I would encourage this committee to quickly eliminate and amend out Sections 1 through 12, because I think Section 13 gets at the critical issues that Joel was bringing before this committee today, and that carriers and others have been talking about these past couple of years. The advent of consumer-directed health care, including health savings accounts, is driving the demand for additional information on health care cost and quality, particularly hospital cost and quality. Hospital costs make up at least one-third of the total health care dollar. Public transparency of hospital aggregate allowed cost information will benefit policymakers like this legislature, the media, labor organizations, healthcare purchasers, agents, brokers, as well as hospitals and health insurers in the final analysis. The difficulty in providing greater public access to hospital allowed cost information was demonstrated in the past 2 years when the Oregon Coalition of Healthcare Purchasers and Oregon's health insurers undertook a pilot project on transparency. The parties were unable to come to terms with the hospital association over the release of that data to a third party, in that case Milliman USA, the actuarial firm, and the efforts ended abruptly when the hospital association threatened suit to prevent public disclosure of the allowed cost information. Senate Bill 1040 is an important first step in this transparency debate. It needs some major reworking. And Regents and other health insurers are open and flexible to find solutions to make this bill work. We recognize and we applaud the hospitals for the efforts they have made in the past few months by way of delivering an important first step in transparency, that being their new website, which we saw previewed today. These voluntary efforts are important and they are needed. They need to be applauded, but we need to move this discussion, this debate on transparency, to one additional level initially. And with that in mind, health insurers have identified four principles to guide our discussions on healthcare cost transparency. First of all, there needs to be additional transparency of hospital healthcare costs. Meaningful hospital cost information, this is the second principle, meaningful hospital cost information must be provided. And by that, by meaningful, we mean average allowable costs, not merely bill charges. And that information should be aggregated so as to protect the interests of both the hospitals and the insurers to those negotiated contract rates. Thirdly, any legislative...
Wait, what was second? The first is the average allowable cost.
The first is that we need that additional transparency of hospital costs. The second is that it must be meaningful in providing aggregate average allowable costs, not merely bill charges. And thirdly, any legislative solution must be crafted for ease of administration and minimal cost. And fourth, there must be state action to minimize the threat of antitrust and breach of contract lawsuits. So with these principles in mind, I will offer some suggestions to make SB 1040 workable. First of all, as I mentioned, eliminate sections 1 through 12. The additional reporting requirements imposed on hospitals, physicians, nursing homes, and other health care providers in Oregon are very controversial, too burdensome, and too costly. If there is a need, as Mr. Goldberg suggested, to gather this additional information, what we would suggest is an interim study group with those very healthcare stakeholders who would be required to produce this additional data, those providers, physicians, hospitals, nursing homes, etc., to work together with Mr. Goldberg's shop to identify how far and how fast and when this data will be produced and what is producible. The second suggestion we would offer is to focus the efforts on Section 13, to revise and clarify and narrow the data that will be produced to the insurance commissioner. The insurance commissioner probably already has authority to request this data from health insurers and produce this type of aggregate information. But as Mr. Ario mentioned, protections are needed to be put in place within the law to protect confidential information, to bring about state action to preclude the threat of antitrust and other lawsuits. And that's what this bill, I think, could be made to do. So what are some of these suggestions and clarifications? First off, identifying the specific type of data that is to be produced by insurance carriers, and that again is average allowed charge information by hospital for a defined set of common procedures. Secondly, specify what the director of the insurance department would do with this data, and by that we would eliminate the broad authority to share the data with any state agency or the federal government, and identify specifically the Oregon Office of Health Policy and Research as the entity to whom the aggregate data would be produced for publication. The third suggestion we have is to give authority to the director to contract with a neutral third party to whom the data would be given and analyzed and aggregated and thereafter provided to the Office of Health Policy and Research. The fourth suggestion is protection of that confidential trade secret information. Not only should the bill provide protections for insurers and hospitals to prevent the public disclosure of this information, the specific contract rates between insurers and hospitals, but we also need that protection of when insurers produce this information for the neutral third party, that production is not subject to lawsuit. The fifth thing that we propose is expanding the liability protections, as I mentioned, to include health insurers. And the last thing is granting authority and encouraging the insurance department to work with entities like the Hospital Association to expand and support the dissemination of aggregate cost transparency information and make this website more useful and provide this information. Some insurers have raised concerns about using the insurance department's market conduct examination process as the vehicle for the production of this data. And we would suggest, or the argument that has been made, is that that's not the purpose of the market conduct examination. So we would ask this committee to consider just a broad grant of authority to DCBS with these protections that I've previously mentioned outside the examination process, so DCBS could gather this information from carriers and provide it to that neutral third party for analysis. In conclusion, Regents and other Oregon health carriers are focused on working with the Insurance Department, with the Office of Healthcare Policy and Research, and with the Hospital Association to find agreeable solutions to quickly move us into an era when hospital aggregate, allowed charge, and quality information is openly shared and discussed in this state. Thank you.
Madam.
Yes.
Yeah. What do you think about the miscellaneous or other charges that the hospital is not responsible for, but come about because a person is there serviced by doctors and given various tests and so on? Are those covered? You're my insurance agency. I seem to have had good luck, but is there a problem with you're not covering a lot of these procedures that people should know that you're not going to cover?
Madam Chairperson and Senator Morissette, I'm not fully understanding your question because the way I understood the point to have been made in prior testimony was that the hospital website, what is reflected in the billed charge information on that website, is only hospital charges.
Right.
It does not reflect what a physician may separately bill for his or her services to the patient. So what you see on that website is only the hospital component. I didn't believe Mr. Earls to say that that these other services were being denied by insurers.
Okay, I guess my point was, I think that if people want, if you want to have transparency, people have to be aware of all of the charges that go through the hospital, whether the hospital is responsible or not, and be aware that some of them may not be covered. That may not be a problem. If you cover everything that's on the bill, that's fine.
Okay.
Is that what you're saying, that you cover it all?
Madam Chairperson, Senator Morissette, carriers, insurance carriers, negotiate rates with the hospital facilities. And when one of our members receives services in that facility, we receive a bill for those services, for the hospital component of those services. That bill reflects the full bill charges of that facility. Mm-hmm. What is paid on behalf of that member to the facility are the allowed charges that that carrier has negotiated with the hospital. So it is that information, that allowed charge information, that we propose be provided to this neutral third party, aggregated, and then
I understand what you're saying. I guess there's a miscommunication. There are other charges that may be made, provided by doctors and tests and so on. Do you deal with those separately then?
Madam Chairman and Senator Morissette, yes, we do. Those are billed separately, and those charges are paid directly to those other providers of care.
Okay.
And I think I understand now where you're going with that. Should we not have transparency of those other provider charges outside the hospital? Is that your question?
Yeah.
In an ideal world, yes, we would move to that era or to that realm as well. And I think eventually we will get there. What we are proposing through this bill is, let's take an important first step that deals with at least one third of the healthcare dollar, that being the hospital cost.
Okay. I have to hold tight. We need four people to do some housekeeping things on a couple of bills. So we're going to continue this because Senator Courtney has to go to Tillamook for the full Ways and Means public hearing tonight, and he has to leave right now. So if you can just hold tight, I'm going to, do I recess this?
Close.
Or I'll have to close. I'm going to close the public hearing on 10:40. I'm going to open a public,
a work session
on Senate Bill 824.
Madam Chair, I move that the rules be suspended and the vote by which Senate Bill 824 was sent to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation be reconsidered.
Senator Cruz moves that the rules be suspended and the vote by which Senate Bill 824 was sent to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation be reconsidered. Is there any discussion? Those are the opinion that the rules be suspended and the vote by which Senate Bill 824 was sent to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation be reconsidered. Vote aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
There you go.
Great. The motion carries. All right. And then we're going to close the work session. We will be hearing this bill on Monday, Mr. Spate, for your infants. All right. So I'm going to close the work session on 824. And then real quick, we need to just do a real quick opening a work session on Senate Bill 882. Mr. Berkovian.
Just real briefly, Chair, we do have the dash four amendments on Senate Bill 882. This was discussed several times. These amendments have been refined to include the Employment Department in this statewide study and involve several higher education and university programs in assessing healthcare workforce needs. According to the supporters, this does have full support of all those involved, including the Employment Department. This does have a minimal fiscal impact that I received orally, but it currently does have a subsequent
bill to Ways and Means.
Okay.
So you'd have to resend this if you wanted to move it to the floor directly.
Okay. Do you want to do that?
Yeah.
All right. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, I move the dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 882.
Senator Cruz moves the dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 882. Any discussion? Any opposition? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move we rescind the subsequent referral to Ways and Means subject to approval of the President on Senate Bill 882 and that Senate Bill 882 as amended be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves that Senate Bill 882 as amended be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a suspension of the referral to Ways and Means upon approval from the Senator from the President's office.
Okay.
Any discussion? Discussion. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Courtney?
Yes.
Senator George?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Senator Morissette?
Aye.
Chair Vaughn Sanderson?
Aye. Motion carries. And who did we have?
I think Senator Courtney ought to carry that.
No, I think it was Senator Shields. Who did we have carrying that last time? I mean, to the floor at this point.
We didn't have a paper. 882.
Oh, 882. Oh, I'm going to carry this one. All right.
There you go.
All right. Forgot which one I was thinking about. All right. We're going to close the work session on Senate Bill 882. And we're going to now continue opening, or we will open the public hearing on Senate Bill 1040, and you are excused.
Okay, now.
All right, now Senator Cruz.
Okay, I still have major concerns with Section 13, but even with this report, does that get a consumer any closer to knowing what they're actually going to have to pay?
Chair Monis Anderson, Senator Cruz. Yes, it does.
How?
It is a better gauge. It is not perfect by any means, but it is a better gauge of what, in the commercial market, an insured individual in this state could expect to see as an allowed charge from a hospital when compared to full bill charges.
Yes.
But what we're talking about is aggregate numbers here. There's no, I mean, you know, I couldn't look at that and say, okay, here's the hospital charge, here's what insurance is going to pay, and so I can do the math and have any certainty there. Because number one, everything's aggregated. So, I mean, you can get ballpark, but that's, I mean, all you're going to get is ballpark.
Chair Monis Anderson, Senator Cruz, you are correct, but I would say that there are really two considerations at issue here in this type of transparency discussion. One is the broad public transparency discussion that takes place on the policy level in this type of a setting. And I think seeing that broad comparison between hospitals on aggregate average allowed cost will help facilitate the debate in the public arena over why one hospital's costs are different than another's. It will facilitate that type of discussion. The second consideration is the one that you mentioned on the individual patient level. What will I pay out of pocket when I go to facility A versus facility B? And that is something that will be taken up between the insured, that patient, and their insurer based on their individual contract.
Okay, I guess, Madam Chair, most people who go to hospitals, it's not like they're out shopping and decide to go to a hospital. They go to a hospital for a reason, and they go where they go, and these discussions kind of happen after the fact to a large degree. If suddenly I have a ruptured hernia, I'm not going to go look on a website to see which hospital I should go to. I'm going to go wherever the hell I can and get the darn thing fixed before I die. So that's just the reality of it. So I have issues with the structure, with the language in that section, and I'm still not sure that it's going to get us to the sort of transparency you seem to think it will. But But I'm willing to be proven wrong, Madam Chair.
All right. Any other discussion? Okay. Are you finished?
Thank you.
Mr. Pine or Ms. Kreider?
Madam Chair, Senators, I'm Patrick Pine, Corporate Benefits Manager for ESCO Corporation, appearing today on behalf of the Oregon Coalition of Healthcare Purchasers, for which I currently serve as President. Artis Belknap from the City of Springfield and on the Coalition Board is kind of our resident expert, so she's available in the audience to answer specific questions that I'm not able to answer as well as she might. The Purchasers Coalition represents employers from both the public and private sectors. We include amongst our membership those who provide fully insured plans, purchased from insurance carriers, some who are fully self-insured for their provision of benefits to their employees, and a few who have some portion of their coverages through commercial insurance and another portion through self-insurance. So we have various combinations represented by our membership. I think the current, what I'll call buzzword for healthcare quality and cost is transparency. I think what purchasers really advocate is that we are seeking what we might call the value proposition. We want the best quality at the lowest possible cost commensurate with high quality. We do not want the cheapest. We do not want the most expensive. We might want, to use a cliche, the best bang for the buck. We apply that same value proposition when we purchase other goods and services. But in healthcare, each of us, myself included, are both wearing a hat as a representative of a group insurance purchaser for our employers, and we also are individual consumers of healthcare goods and services for ourselves and our family members. Just to briefly cite ESCO's situation, in the United States today, ESCO currently spends over $10 million per year for medical and dental benefits for its employees in the United States. And those employees, on average, are contributing approximately 25% of that amount as their contribution to that total cost. I'm talking about generally medical and dental. I can tell you ESCO sells products all over the globe. Many of our customers, if they were spending over $10 million a year to buy products from my corporation, would demand not only full information about our pricing, but they would demand full information about the quality of our products, and they do. But even there, they will typically, for that kind of magnitude of a purchase from our company, would probably send a delegation on-site to our production facilities for an on-site audit visit, if you will, maybe consisting of several days. They're going to thoroughly demand to see all kinds of information from us for that kind of an investment in products that they might purchase from us. And that same process goes on for other goods and services at much lower costs. For example, in our business, we're a steel parts manufacturer where we buy quantities of scrap steel. We're going to demand very substantial information about the quality of the scrap steel that we purchase to assure that the proper contents of that metal are included. And we go to all kinds of due diligence with the people who sell us that scrap steel to do that. In the area of healthcare goods and services, especially for hospital services, we cannot claim that we have anywhere near the same degree of scrutiny that we apply for all the other purchasing decisions we make, even for much less sums of money. So I think the coalition memberships and other purchasers, not only in Oregon but all over the country, started to ask, why can't we get more reliable information, similar to the kinds of information we routinely receive for other purchases, often for much less money, about our health care generally and hospitals specifically. We started demanding this type of information a few years ago, and I think I would argue that we started more in the prescription drug arena. Many of you, society in general, has spent a lot of time having a similar kind of discussion of prescription drugs that started a few years ago. In answer to Senator Morissette's questions earlier to people who testified earlier than I would suspect that we're now kind of getting heavily involved with hospitals. I think physicians and practitioners are probably the next area where you're starting to hear national debate about how we can get more information from that sector. I think that will be the next evolutionary step, personally. But returning to sort of my main theme, I think purchasers are saying for that kind of investment, we need more information about what it is that we're purchasing. We need it both for our companies and we need it for our employees and their families. And I think that is not something unusual or radical. It's been done for decades in other parts of our capital economy. Speaking for the coalition, we did attempt to do that. I know, have you heard earlier comment? We attempted to do that seeking what we thought was a collaborative approach. But we were ultimately unable to find a way to agree with the hospitals in Oregon about the particular approach that we espoused. However, despite that, the coalition never did drop its desire to obtain more information that's relevant to quality and cost. We've never opposed continuing to work collaboratively to that end. However, this discussion of Senate Bill 1040 and any changes that might come about, I will pledge on behalf of the coalition, we will continue to offer to work collaboratively with all the interest to that end. We're not insensitive to the legitimate concerns that have been raised, and we have, I think, consistently tried to address those concerns, but we still have that ultimate objective of obtaining more reliable information than is now the case. We do want to compliment the Hospital Association regarding the new website. It's very exciting. We appreciate that it is a very significant step forward. I still think that the primary sticking point revolves around the disclosure of charges. Oregon hospitals, like hospitals elsewhere, have begun to disclose what are termed either bill charges or what otherwise are sometimes called charge master prices. In the handout that I distributed a little earlier, I attached an article that relates to a new California law that just recently went into effect, which requires hospitals in California to public disclose what they call charge master data. And I attached a copy of an article that appeared on the front page of the Wall Street Journal on December 27th, which clearly articulates the reason that purchasers are not satisfied with that information. I won't take the time to go over that. I attached the article, so you may want to look at that. It gives you a good idea what the concern is with billed charges. Finally, I want to comment as an individual consumer. I do want to respond to the frequent claim that the so-called individual consumer will simply go to the apparent lowest cost provider if hospitals are compared strictly on these yardsticks on a side-by-side basis. I have some trouble accepting that claim that the average consumer is simply going to go to the lowest price for that service, because I'm going to use something that will probably be offensive to some, but if that were the case, I think everyone would buy a Yugo and no one would buy a BMW. That is why I think this is a step in the right direction, despite some concerns about the language of the bill. I think it is a step in the right direction. It needs to be combined with a lot of other information, especially on the quality side. I think the Purchasers Coalition will offer to continue to offer to collaborate to achieve those goals. I would remind you that Artis Belknap's here to respond to any specific questions you might have. Thank you very much.
Yes, Senator George.
Mr. Pine, thank you very much. Does ESCO Corporation sell products to different individuals at different costs?
Yes.
And if you have someone that you're having to kind of subsidize a little bit, you know, in order to get the business, you shift that need to keep your company alive onto someone else and try to charge a little more?
I'm not in the marketing or pricing side of our business, but my short answer is yes, but I'm going to put a but to append that to that. Okay. Answer, yes. Within limits. Like all businesses, we have to be careful not to make too many special deals with too many customers and destroy the integrity of your overall pricing. So, yes, we have customers all the time who are going to put the squeeze on us to lower our prices or do other things, and they're going to make all the arguments. That's part of the nature of our society and the way our economy works. And so, yes, we do, but I would say within some fairly strict limits, because you have to be really careful about how many exceptions you make.
Can I have a follow-up?
Yes.
Do you do any, ESCO obviously does business with government? Produce products the government would
buy? Yes, we do. Certain divisions of our business are more involved with sales to government than others. Our Oregon business does limited business with government, but some of our production facilities elsewhere in the country and around the world do a significant amount of government business.
Okay, here's my next question, if I could. if you are doing business with government and we ask you for complete disclosure relative to all of your costs relative to that that product we're going to buy from you, and you had, obviously, with the products you produce, some proprietary interest in protecting certain secrets that might result in the production of that product you'd sell to government, what would you think about being required to report those and the possibility that a government agency that you reported to could, in fact, divulge it to someone else?
We would be very concerned about that. We spend a considerable amount of time and energy protecting our intellectual capital. We produce a lot of patented products. The whole protection of our intellectual capital is a very big issue for us. I think there is a difference, however, and that is healthcare affects a broader public interest than a sale of one of our products to a specific individual customer. And there is a, what I would say, a larger public interest when it comes to the provision of healthcare than there probably is when ESCO sells its product to a select customer. And I do think that is why perhaps there is a greater legitimate role for government to play in this arena than there might be for the kinds of business that ESCO conducts.
Just one follow-up question. Mm-hmm. Isn't the problem here that Medicare and Medicaid reimburse at levels below most of the time the cost of them actually running their operation? So they are forced, because of action of government, to shift that cost onto others, the private pay, the units you're talking about. And isn't that the real major problem? That rather in here trying to pick off one another and devour one another with ideas like this, we should be going after full compensation by the people in government who don't pay enough to cover the cost.
I would agree that it's part of the problem. Whether it's the biggest part of the problem, I'd have to think about that. I guess my response, though, is I don't believe that. I mean, I represent a company that's very much involved in a competitive business. I don't think we're asking hospitals or healthcare providers to do something different than what our business has been doing for decades in terms of some of the responses we have to people who might buy the products we produce. I don't think we are trying to devour healthcare providers. I wouldn't characterize it that way. I would return to it's the value proposition. Just like anything else we buy, we want to get the best value we can.
All right. Thank you. All right. Lynn Marie, Kreider, and then any other questions for these two gentlemen? Your excuse. And we'll bring up Liz Stevenson and Ruby Houghton.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Lynn Marie Kreider. I am here today to testify in support of the bill on behalf of the Service Employees International Union. We support the bill both because we believe it is essential for policymakers, but also for those who purchase health care on behalf of groups of workers and for individual members of the public. We understand the limits of transparency as a method of cost containment in the health care industry for some of the reasons that Senator Cruz talked about earlier, that is that we are not always in a position where we can select the hospital that we go to, and that's why we've proposed some then testified in support of some other pieces of legislation to deal with hospital cost. But we do believe that it is important to have additional information about cost and pricing in hospitals, as well as quality of the services delivered in hospitals. You have my written comments. Let me make a couple of additional comments that you don't have in writing. One of Mr. Becker testified earlier that his proposal would be that you delete sections 1 through 12 of the bill. We would not support a deletion of that piece of the bill. We think both pieces of the bill, 1 through 12 and 13, need work, but they're both important pieces of the puzzle. Let me say that the section 13 only deals with the cost piece, and I think maybe focused on hospitals. Well, it could be broader, although it's been spoken of in terms of hospital services in particular. And if we're looking at also improving transparency with respect to quality, we need some of the pieces that are in sections 1 through 12. I would also note that there's been talk about hospital care being a third of the healthcare dollar, and that's correct, but hospital care is increasingly delivered on an outpatient, not an inpatient basis. And right now what we have, what we're collecting data on, is inpatient care and not outpatient or emergency department care. This bill in Section 1 through 12 directs Uber to collect data and the hospitals to provide data with respect to emergency department and outpatient services. That's important improvement in the data that we have would have available to us, and that needs to happen. I would also note that in Section 1 through 12 you have something that allows the state to prescribe the method of reporting, not only for financial data, but for other kinds of data that allow us to assess quality and allow us to actually look at cost. That's an important piece of what's there. Of course, Section 1 through 12 also says, let's start collecting data on other kinds of medical care providers, not just on hospitals. I would agree that we haven't thought that out real thoroughly, and it may be that that's too big a bite. I don't know. We're willing to help work on it because we think we do need to move to transparency in all those areas to the extent that we can. I think given the time, yes, I'll let you read the specific suggestions that I have for improvement in the bill and any questions that the committee may have. We'd be happy
to. Senator George.
Ms. Kreider, you have, your union has employees that are working in the areas that would be regulated, would be reporting.
Madam Chair, Senator George, that's correct.
Right. And you are a union negotiating with these providers who would be reporting additional information that might be very valuable when it comes to negotiation for contracts. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Senator George, boy, I had not thought about whether or not it would be useful to us. We think of this as useful in the piece of our negotiations that is negotiation for health care, because that is the cost of health care is a huge piece of any collective bargaining situation. I don't think that the additional information that would be provided here would be useful in us bargaining wages and benefits generally.
Hey. I'm simply here, Madam Chair, as arm candy for Lynn Marie and to answer any questions. So,
right. Ms. Houghton. Thanks, God. I don't have to be the candy today. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ruby Houghton, and I am the Legislative and Public Affairs Director for CARE Oregon, Oregon's largest Medicaid managed care health plan. And we are also a member of Coalition for a Healthy Oregon, COHO, which is all of the managed care plans in the state of Oregon, with the exception of two. I just want to make some very, very brief comments. I believe that a lot of people have made my comments, but I'd like to go on record in letting you know that, unlike Mr. Becker, I believe that we could take Section 13 out altogether. And my concern with Section 13 is that we have contracts that we negotiate, and in kind of abiding by what's here, we would be in breach of contract. We would be probably in the middle of lawsuits that, based on the financial support that we receive from the state as a Medicaid managed care plan, we would rather not use our dollars in that way. We would rather use those to provide care rather than for lawsuits. It's critically important to us that the confidentiality of contracts be kept, that we be able to do that negotiation without having to disclose that information. If it is possible to provide it in aggregate, which it is, which we have done for the state, I believe that we are willing to do that because we do it. And a neutral third party would probably be most amenable to us. And so with that, I know y'all are probably tired, and it's beautiful outside, so I want to give you opportunity to ask me questions and to thank you for your time today. Questions? All right.
We have Scott Gallen and Artis Belknap and Kevin Earls and Bruce Bishop. I want you to come on Mondays to give more time to flush some things out, and I will want to continue the discussion on Monday. And while they're, Scott and Artis Belknap is coming up, I have a question
Artis was actually here with Patrick, I think.
Oh, Artis was just here with Patrick, right? Never mind. Okay, but I do have a question for Bruce Goldberg before Scott gets on. Long-term care facilities are excluded from these provisions in the existing statute. Are long-term care facilities properly included in this bill? Can you come up real quick and answer that question for me? I want to get it on the record.
For the record, once again, Bruce Goldberg, Office of Oregon Health Policy and Research. Madam Chair, nursing home facilities are included in this bill.
Okay, and given the vast amount of information that the long-term care facilities report to both the state and federal governments, is it possible that your office, isn't it possible for your office to collect all the data and information you might need without a statutory directive?
Madam Chair, yes, we had a discussion yesterday with representatives from nursing homes, and indeed there is a large amount of information currently available, just not in one place and readily known to individuals, that indeed I think would help move the bill, help move the purpose of this, which is increased transparency. What was pointed out was that the over 80% or somewhere around 80% of nursing home payments are from public payers, and that information is readily available.
Thank you. Mr. Gallant.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Scott Gallant. I'm with the Oregon Medical Association. I'm not going to read my testimony just before you, but I'll go through a couple of points. First of all, I want to thank the Chair for having the opportunity yesterday, along with others, to discuss both the scope and purpose of the proposed legislation, as well as a recognition that the bill needs significant modification. I would agree with Mr. Becker that sections 1 through 13 being amended out of the bill would be a beautiful thing, but I'm not sure, Madam Chair, that's your intent at this point. There are large distinctions between physicians and other entities in what they may charge and what they are paid for their services. As all of you know, or if you don't know, you should know, Medicare determines what physicians may be paid under the Medicare program. Medicaid determines what physicians may be paid under the Medicaid program. And we are talking about just on those, as well as commercial carriers who limit physician payment through private contracting negotiations, are talking about millions and millions and millions of records just in the state of Oregon. The way you can calculate it fairly easily is that there are approximately 8,200 clinically practicing physicians in the state. There are approximately 9 to 10,000 ICD-9 codes that physicians use in order to get reimbursed for their coverage. And you would literally require probably a new mountain of paperwork and data in order to be able to begin to analyze the data that this bill would generally enable and inure to the Department of Health Policy and Research. It would also do other things for the first time. It seems to imply, at least for physicians who have historically been excluded from this statute, into peer review data and other data that has never been publicly available to my knowledge under other health policies adopted by this legislative body. All of that being said, I think it is important for the medical community to work with the chair the other participants who are interested in better disclosure of information. But I think there's some mixed messages about the type of information that people are truly seeking, whether it is, in fact, just cost data, charge data. Charge data actually doesn't tell anyone anything, at least not from the physician perspective. Cost data doesn't really tell you much either, really, other than they're being severely under-reimbursed under Medicaid and Medicare, or without a doubt, and there are a plethora of studies that show that, or whether the real interest is in performance data, outcomes data, quality review data, for services that they provide. And that's a different ball game than this bill most certainly seems to contemplate as I read it. So I would suggest and suggest in my testimony that we'd be more than willing to voluntarily work with the players to actually make a determination of what would work in at least our arena, physician medical services, and what the actual target is, have it more focused so that there would be actually a benefit to the effort that people are seeking. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Questions? I want the stakeholders to know that on Monday I had asked that if you don't like this bill, I wanted some constructive criticism. Some said eliminate certain sections. Others said eliminate the other sections. Some probably will say eliminate the whole thing. But that's what I do want when we continue this conversation on Monday, how we can change this bill if you want it changed. All right, Senator George.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Scott, I'm intrigued by the first sentence at the top of the second page where you say that you believe that the cost of collecting this data may not ensure any benefits. But I'm intrigued. To me, it would appear, depending on how this thing was set up and what kind of questions were asked, that it might, in fact, be very, very costly for not only your folks but also all the hospital people to put this together, be concerned about what information might be divulged to someone else. There's always going to be that issue. But you're going to be going through that information to make sure that you haven't released something you shouldn't. Those costs are going to have to be recovered somewhere. Can you help me with that? I mean, is that what you were pointing to? When you get the data, what are you going to do with it now?
Madam Chair, Senator George, a lot of the data in regard to physicians is, in fact, already available to the public under the Medicare program, Medicaid program. Office of Health Plan and Policy has access to data from the fee-for-service portion of Medicaid. But if physicians were required to submit all of the data that they submit for the care of patients that they see, we are talking about millions and millions of data points, without a question. And it would be exceedingly expensive to, in my estimation, the way this is currently drafted, for the state to try to not only collect the data, to determine new methods of required reporting for whatever the determination would be for the information that would be authorized under this proposal, and an outcome that I think the goal, as stated by other proponents, is to reduce costs affiliated with physician services or other services. I can't speak for the hospitals. I don't think Mr. Earls would ever want me to. Let's take a look at a couple of the largest programs that physicians deal with, Medicare. Physicians are scheduled to have a 5% cut in Medicare costs unless Congress acts this year. Supposedly, because of the formula used at the federal level, in order to fix a system that is essentially not risen to meet the cost of physicians over the last decade, even under the Medicare program, it would require close to $100 billion over a 10-year period to fix that problem. Medicaid has increased reimbursement for physician services by 9% while their costs
are under 30. I've got to cut you off. Sorry. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1040 and immediately adjourn.